Hey everybody, it's Terry with Marketing Mambo, and I am so pleased to introduce you to our guest today, Eric Dickman. He is the founder of Five Echelon Group. As you can imagine, it's difficult for smaller companies to develop the same sort of strategy that you would find at big companies like Oracle, where Eric spent 18 years of his marketing career. He helps smaller companies to have laser-focused marketing strategy through something that's called fractional CMOs. I'll let Eric talk more about what that actually is, but I'd like to touch on something that I see as a big problem in many marketing departments, and that is people feeling burnt out, underappreciated, frustrated, and stressed out. And believe me, I was there. I at times wondered, what the heck can I do differently to get a different result? If that sounds like you and you're not quite sure what direction to go in, I encourage you to go to my website at terrybmcdougall.com and set up a free, no obligation exploratory call with me. As an executive and leadership coach, I help people every day expand that overlap between their professional success and their personal happiness. So if you're finding yourself in a position where you're feeling stressed, you'd like to be happier at work, please reach out to me at terrybmcdougall.com. And without further ado, let the Mambo begin. Welcome to Marketing Mambo with your host, Terry McDougall. It's the fun and fast podcast where we chat with marketing movers and shakers from around the globe. Hi, everybody. It's Terry McDougall with Marketing Mambo. And today I have a treat for you. My guest is Eric Dickman, who is founder and CMO of Five Echelon Group, a firm focused on management consulting and marketing strategy for small and mid-sized companies. Prior to founding Five Echelon Group 2 years ago, Eric led a successful marketing career in the software and financial services industry. Eric is also the host of the Virtual CMO podcast, as well as a second podcast about the quest to find balance and fulfillment in life called Work Life, on which I was a recent guest. So welcome, Eric. So great to talk with you today.
Hey, Terry, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's great to be here. And yes, I enjoyed our conversation the other day on work life. That was great.
Yeah, me too. And I'm glad that we get to continue that. Eric, would you mind introducing yourself to our listeners and telling us a bit more about your background?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. As you mentioned, the role that I perform today is something that I call a virtual CMO, which is a fractional executive for small and mid-sized businesses, really companies that are trying to grow the trajectory of their business, but don't necessarily have a full-time executive presence to help them create a strategy and then execute it around marketing. So the Five Echelon Group is a practice that I started to help companies grow their marketing presence through this idea of a virtual CMO. And that's the culmination of about 30 years of work within corporate America. I spent about 18 years at Oracle Corporation in their marketing group for financial services. And so it's been a fun journey for me, but I absolutely love being out on my own and being a consultant and helping the small and mid-sized businesses, which are really the lifeblood of the economy, helping them really grow.
Yeah, that's so great. I think it's really interesting too that you found this niche to help these businesses. I've done a little bit of consulting with small and medium-sized businesses. And some of the things that I've observed is that a lot of times there's actually not anybody who's dedicated 100% to marketing. And if they do have somebody doing marketing, it might be a sales assistant doing some things off the side of his or her desk. Marketing can be very strategic when it's interwoven with the mission of the organization. And not every company can afford to bring somebody of your caliber on board full time. So this seems to be a win-win.
That's exactly what I've seen out in the marketplace too. Many organizations will have somebody like a vice president of sales and marketing. And whenever you see that kind of a title, what it generally means is that person is focused primarily on sales, and then they'll do a little bit of marketing when they have time. And what I often see is that what doing a little bit of marketing here and there means that tactics will get executed without necessarily being joined together underneath a common plan for what you're trying to achieve. And what happens so often when you have these isolated tactics running is that you really don't get any leverage from it. You don't have one tactic that builds on another, which then can create some momentum for your business. And too often, business leaders look at marketing as a faucet that they can turn on and turn off whenever they want to grow the business, or they need some more leads, they need some more prospects. But it doesn't really work that way. It's an ongoing, consistent effort. And the more consistent you are about putting your message out there to the right target audience, the more success you will see over time. It's not something you can easily just turn on and off.
I agree 100%. And you're touching on a topic that has come up again and again in this podcast. And that is, for people who are not marketing professionals, a lot of times they see the tip of the iceberg, if you will. They see the results of all of that research and strategizing. They're seeing the output of marketing and assuming that, oh, anybody can do that, right? Oh, my assistant has PowerPoint. She can put a brochure together, and not realizing that the best marketing is really interconnected with the mission of the company and can serve as an advocate for the customer to build that bridge between what the company is providing and the needs of the customer. And that's very strategic and that's very foundational. Often companies just get started serving and they don't initially have to get mature around the marketing function. But as time goes on, like you said, oh, let's just give it to the guy who had sales. And when marketing and sales can work hand in glove, that works extremely well. But when marketing gets pushed off center, where things are more skewed towards the sales point of view, that things end up being really short term and not super strategic, like you said, tactical.
Yep. No, I think that's so true. The example that I often use when I talk about consistency in marketing is turn on the evening news. How many car commercials are going to run over the course of that 30-minute evening news broadcast? It's going to be one after the other. If you tune in Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, chances are those same dealers, those same audio manufacturers are going to be running the same ads or a version of that ad day after day. And if it was so effective just to run an ad and all of a sudden these people would be flooding a car dealership, then you'd see them once and they would serve those customers. And then maybe in a month later, you'd see another one. But it's not the way it works. It's being top of mind. It's building that interest over time. And that's why it's so challenging many times for marketers to look at any particular marketing activity and say, this is the one that ultimately caused the sale. Because the consistency over time is building that trust. It's building that authority. It's building that enthusiasm for the prospect to actually make the move to become a buyer. And each one plays a role in that. It's usually not one is the only thing that is responsible for ultimately turning that prospect into a buyer. It's that steady cadence over time.
Yeah, I agree. And that was one of the frustrations that I had as a marketer. I work primarily in B2B marketing. And when you've got long, complex sales cycle, and you're working in marketing, it's often very difficult to build an attribution model to be able to point to any particular tactic to say, oh, we're going to do more of this because this is what got them across the goal line to buy. And especially in B2B marketing, it's about building a relationship. It's about building trust. It's about building an ecosystem within which you're having this relationship with the customer or prospect. And it can be hard to measure for sure. A lot of companies also will look at marketing as an expense rather than an investment. And it's much easier to measure things nowadays. There's the technology to do that. And with more of an emphasis on digital marketing, we can measure faster than we used to, and with the CRM systems and all of that kind of thing. But sometimes it's still difficult, and things that aren't necessarily measurable can still be valuable.
You're so right about things like attribution models. There are a number of software vendors out there that have attribution models built into their products, or they sell them separately, but it's still very hard. It's not as scientific as you think it would be. At the same time, you've got the ability, let's say you're running a Facebook ad, you've got the ability to run 16 versions of that ad at once within a fairly short period of time, see which one gets the best engagement. And the variations of this ad might just be that you're changing a word in the headline or the background picture or the text of the main message underneath the banner. It could be very subtle things. So in some ways, the tools have developed to the point where we can be very smart and accurate about what works and what doesn't. But ultimately, to figure out what was that one thing that made the difference in that customer's buyer's journey, that's a little bit more difficult to attribute.
Yeah, it really is. And when you're iterating like that, pretty much in real time, iterating and trying to optimize, I always think of it like we in marketing are out on the horizon or on the vanguard, pushing out into the future. And just because something worked in the past does not mean that it's necessarily going to work in the future. We often have to take note of what are trends? How do people feel about things right now? It doesn't mean that just because they preferred this in the past, that they're necessarily going to prefer this going forward. And we always have to be testing and learning and hypothesizing about what direction we think the consumer is going in so that we can meet them there.
It's so true. I'm amazed how much postal mail I get that was addressed to the previous owner of my house, who has not lived here for almost 15 years and who also has passed away. And it's amazing how much comes from similar companies at similar times of years. It's almost as if they're in this rinse and repeat kind of marketing cycle where they just keep doing the same thing over and over. There are certain physical mail solicitations that I get on a regular basis, and I know what to expect. I can pretty much predict when they're going to show up. And they're the same every time. That's a trap in marketing as well, is that people find something that works. And so they just keep doing it over and over without ever taking the time to say, is there something that might work better? Should we look at this? Marketing is about experimentation. It's about trying different things. And I see so many companies that invest over and over in the same thing. It can become a very repetitive cycle without ever really taking the time to experiment to see if there's something you could be doing better and investing those marketing dollars more wisely.
What you were mentioning about getting mail, we've lived in our house for 15 years also, and we occasionally still get mail addressed to the previous owners and actually mail addressed to owners even before that. I got my start in marketing in direct mail, and we would just regularly run the list against the National Change of Address database. And I'm like, okay, guys, well, this is 25 years later. This is just a basic. It's just, they're just throwing money away. I'd love to know, why did you name your company Five Echelon Group?
It's so funny that you asked that, because I have a friend who is working on starting up a company right now, and he's going through the same process that I think a lot of us do when we start a company. It's okay, let's go to GoDaddy and start typing in domain names and seeing if the .com is available. And it's not surprising that almost every single word domain name is gone. Those are all taken by now. Many of the English language, many common two-word combinations, gone. You can't find those either. So you get into either made-up words, interesting combinations of words, or then you get into some of the funnier or different suffixes, right? The IOs, biz, orgs, mm-hmm. and whatnot. So I was really struggling with this, like many do. And I really wanted to have a purpose when I started my own company. I really wanted to do things that were a little bit different than my corporate experience. And I wanted to bring a set of values to the table so that people knew the kind of business that I wanted to run and the kind of service that I could provide them. So I settled on this idea of the five echelon, and really what they are is guiding principles. So it's organizational culture is the foundational piece of it. It's product, it's process, it's people, and it's product. And all of these things come together to form the five echelon. And that is really what I focus my business on. It's focused, it's helping businesses with these foundational areas as ways, if you get all of these things in sync within your business, you have a much greater likelihood of success. Because if you don't have a good culture, if it's toxic, if you don't have a good working environment for your employees, it's going to be very hard to be successful. If you don't have a good product, if you don't have good processes, if you don't have good people, ultimately, you're not going to get to that final one, which is the profit, right? The profit has to be there. And it's even amazing how many businesses don't really have a business model that optimizes for that profit, is whatever's left over at the end of the day, as opposed to a goal that they are building their business to achieve.
I love that. I had a feeling that there was something really interesting behind that. It was reminding me of what we were talking about just a couple minutes ago, building that ecosystem within which you can have that relationship with the customer. And all of those factors that you were talking about are critical. If you've got a great product, the people that are delivering it aren't very nice or trustworthy, you're not going to do well, or if you don't have it priced correctly. So these are all things that a marketing consultant or a virtual CMO like you can help with. So talk to me about what kind of companies come to you to work with them.
I get a lot of younger startup type companies. A typical role for a startup company is a lot of investment early on goes into just developing the product. They're not as worried about selling it. They're worried about getting it done. And so they get to a point where it's, okay, now we've got a product. We've really got to start to build our brand awareness. We've got to get it out there in the marketplace. We've got to start selling it. So I have a lot of these younger companies who will come to me looking for that expertise on how to do that. I'll also have companies that they're just stagnating. They just have never either put a focus on marketing, or maybe, as you mentioned earlier, maybe they have some fairly junior level people on board and they're doing some social media, buying some Facebook ads, or they built a website, but they don't have a plan. They don't really know how to pull it all together to really make their strategy actionable to the point where they can start to see measurable results. So I find that a lot of the businesses that I work with come from one of those two camps, either really starting to build an original marketing foundation, or those that just have never really had a focus or an emphasis on marketing and now want to start to grow their business. We've talked about the fact that sometimes marketing is a side job for somebody, whether it's an executive level person who has it as part of their title, or whether there's just a team or a single person that sort of on the side, they do some marketing related things. And there's not a right or wrong answer to that. I don't say that you have to have a dedicated marketing executive, but what I will say is you have to have a marketing plan. You have to have a strategy for what you're trying to achieve, because if you start spending money, and we all know that marketing dollars can evaporate pretty quickly when you open up the wallet, you have to have a plan and know what you're trying to achieve, know what your objective is, know what you're going to be able to view as success at the end of the day. Because if you don't, you're just throwing money away. You really are.
You and I both worked for the same organization, or predecessor to the same organization. So you, First Union, and I worked for Wachovia, and they came together. We weren't there at the same time. Even in large, mature organizations like that, sometimes marketing can be looked at as an expense rather than an investment. The difference is whether you have a plan. If you've got a plan, you know what you're investing in and what you like you said, you know what success looks like. So you can measure the return on that investment, and you can make decisions going forward based on how your investments perform about whether you continue to invest in that, or whether you tweak it, or what you do with your strategy. What are some of the biggest challenges that you have going into these smaller organizations that haven't had a senior level marketer in place? Is there a lot of education that's involved? What are some of the biggest challenges?
So I think a couple of things. If it's a very sales driven organization, everything is about lead flow, right? Everything is about, we need new leads. We need new leads. And there's not this understanding of the groundwork that really goes into developing a consistent pipeline so that leads will come in at a steady, regular basis. You can't just go out and buy batches of leads. There are many people that will sell you batches of leads, but they're those 15-year-old mailing addresses that we were talking about earlier. A lot of that information is just not good. The old adage, you get what you pay for. What you're really trying to do is find buyers with intent, people who are actually looking to buy your product or service. So I think organizations that are very sales focused often don't realize what goes into truly making an effective marketing strategy. That's one thing. I would also say that there are companies out there that just believe that marketing is something that anybody can do. And that's not really true either. Marketing is getting increasingly complicated. We've got some fantastic tools, some fantastic automation But we also have channels that are coming up all over the place. You've got not only the web, which you need to have a good and significant presence for your own company's website, but then are you doing anything to have some organic content out there that people can find when they're searching on your products or services? Are you on the various social media channels, which there seem to be more and more of each day? Are you developing content of value so that people can begin to build trust in your brand, that you are an authority in whatever it is you do? There are a lot of things that have to take place, and it's complicated. I'm not an expert in every one of those fields, never claimed to be, but what I do know is who the experts are and who you can bring in to be able to get that done. If you're going to do SEO, do it right. If you're going to build content, if you're going to make a video that you're going to stick on your homepage, do it right. Make it compelling. Make it engaging. And there are people out there that do that for a living. So I think that's another thing that I see a lot is that companies just think that it's marketing. Anybody can do it. And that's not true. It's increasingly complicated.
There's this misperception in a way, because we live in this capitalist society and there's a constant barrage of marketing coming at all of us, that I think a lot of people think, I've consumed a lot of marketing, so therefore I know what good marketing is. And that's not actually true. And it's not really even about sometimes liking the marketing that you're seeing. It's okay, what was the purpose of that? To your point about lead generation, not every lead is equal. Like you said, you can buy 15-year-old lists. And yes, those are leads. There's probably somebody in there that might buy, but are they qualified? And also going back to your comment earlier about the car commercials generally, especially the ones by the manufacturers, those are not calls to action typically. Right. Those are brand messages. It's, hey, remember that Toyota exists, or we want to reinforce with you like that Ford F-150 is about rugged individualism, right? So when it's time to trade your truck in, that you're going to the Ford dealership. But there's just different roles that different marketing tactics play in the whole scheme of what we try to do to support business.
One thing that I would add is that a lot of companies truly believe that their product is differentiated. And in fact, it's not that different. We were talking about our former employer, First Union. I always get a kick out of it because I've spent a lot of my career in financial services. What is the difference between a Bank of America and a Wells Fargo and a PNC and a US Bank? What is it? They all offer checking accounts. Each one will swear that their product is significantly better because it has this, that, or the other thing. But I think for the average consumer, what's different is, do they have a convenient location that has a drive-up ATM? When I call into the call center, is my problem addressed? Are they charging me reasonable fees? It tends to be about service and convenience. And you go back to the car commercials, every car from the least expensive to the most expensive has four wheels and a steering wheel. It's going to get you from place A to point B. But I think where these car companies invoke emotion through their ads, they show their cars driving up twisty mountain roads in the rain and through the snow, and you look successful if you're driving this car. That's all about emotion. It's not about the features, really. There are some times that they'll have something new and innovative that they'll want to highlight. But in general, it's about the emotion. It's about who you will be when you sit down in that car. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to build that emotion up inside of you. So the next time you're driving past the Lexus dealer, you're like, I'm going to stop in and take a look at that car. That's what they're trying to do. You're exactly right. There's not necessarily a specific call to action in every one of these ads. It's laying that foundation.
Yeah, definitely. I know that you've worked for big companies like we mentioned, First Union and Oracle. How would you compare and contrast working in marketing for these big organizations and working as a fractional CMO with smaller clients that you work with?
Yeah, I hear that question a lot because people say, oh, you must have been so lucky you had these big budgets to work with when you were working for a large corporation. And we absolutely did. I can remember spending $500,000 just to build out a trade show booth and things like that. There were significant resources that were available to me when I was at a larger corporation. But then there's the flip side. If you think about a company like that, like an Oracle or a First Union or a Bank of America or whoever it would be, they literally have thousands of different products that they sell. And so as a brand name, they're very recognizable. but people might not understand, oh, they're in the wealth management business. Oh, they're in the mortgage business. Oh, they're in the credit card business. Oh, they're in this business, that business. And that becomes the challenge when you work for these large companies is somebody like myself was given a portfolio of a segment of products within the larger company, and I had to market that segment. But underneath this brand that I had very little control over, because that's very fiercely guarded in terms of the overall image of the brand, but you had to somehow, within all those constraints, make your product and service stand out when people tended to know the company for one thing or another. And if I contrast that to many of the businesses I work with, or even my own business, I sell a few very specific services in a very niche market. And a lot of smaller businesses, they maybe have a handful of product offerings. So in some ways, even though their marketing dollars are less, they have the ability to be much more focused in what they're doing because their target market, their niche is so much more defined.
As you were talking about that, I could relate very keenly because I worked for two large banks and most of the time was working in B2B areas of banking. And when you work for a bank that has a very large retail network, that's the 800-pound gorilla within the organization. And everything is geared towards supporting that. Even though the businesses that I work for had much better margins, they were small and they were niche, and we had smaller segments that we were going after. And sometimes we were, even in some cases, fighting against that perception of the brand as, oh, the friendly bank on the corner. No, we're a sophisticated investment bank. And not only that, but even the competition for resources within the organization. One of the things that I was a little frustrated about in my last role was that I had to compete against other businesses to get marketing budget. The company was using this portfolio approach to how they were going to award marketing dollars. And for long sales cycle, complex business sale, I couldn't always tell them what the return on the investment was going to be in 12 months. It might be an 18 to 24 month sales cycle, and it could be a big payoff at the end of that. But if somebody was going to invest in running a credit card campaign and they could get a payback in 6 months, they were investing in that. And it was a little frustrating. I agree with you. The complexity of these larger organizations can be tough, even though when you were talking earlier about the role that you have now and maybe not being an expert in SEO and all of that, that you know where to go, usually in those large organizations. I was the sort of strategic marketer working with the heads of business and coming up with the plans. I knew that we needed to do things. I didn't know how to do it, but nice for me and the organization, we had those specialists within the organization that I could get them to work on portions of the plan to deliver what we needed from a marketing standpoint to the business.
Yeah, having those internal resources was great to be able to do things in-house, people who understood the requirements of the brand and what would be acceptable and what wouldn't. It would be great. Although there's a lot of prioritization that happens there. If you think about some of the largest marketers out there in the world, the Coca-Colas, the Procter & Gambles, Kraft Heinz, General Motors, think about all the cars that General Motors makes, and then think about how many of them end up in a car commercial that you can recall seeing, or all the products that Procter & Gamble makes, and how many of them have you actually seen an ad for? Decisions have to be made as to where they're going to get the biggest bang for the buck. And there's probably a product manager for each and every product that's there, but companies have to pick and choose how they're going to put their marketing resources to work and where they're going to get the biggest bang for the buck. And I'm sure you experienced this as well when you're talking about things like wealth management or whatnot, but the money's going to the retail network. I certainly saw that at Oracle as well. It was primarily known as a database company, and they would be all over that in terms of marketing. Some of the other areas within the business, you really had to fight for every dollar.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So what kind of impact is COVID having on your client?
COVID has been such a mixed bag in terms of the impact that it's had on various businesses. One of the things that I see is that certain businesses have been very agile. They've been able to pivot and see new opportunities and figure out a way that they could take advantage of those opportunities. So let's just give an example that I think everybody can understand. Look at restaurants, right? There are some that said, okay, we just are going to wait until indoor dining has opened back up. And many of those are not around today because it's been on and off and been very difficult to manage. There are others that have said, okay, we're going to build on the sidewalk and we're going to make this work, or we're going to embrace delivery or pickup. And they've figured out a way to do that. And that's just a common example that I think we've all personally experienced. But there are a lot of other businesses that have really had to make those kind of choices too. And are they either going to sit back and wait for it to be business as usual, or are they going to look for opportunities to take advantage of the situation? I've certainly seen a lot of people pull back on their marketing spend just because it's unclear what the economy is going to do. They don't know exactly where some of those opportunities are going to be. So they've taken a wait and see approach to it. I've seen others look at competitors in distress and say, this is an opportunity for us to gain some market share because we're in better shape. And so they've aggressively invested in some marketing and product development activities. It's really been all over. But if I had to put it in one column or the other, I would say by and large, there's been a lot of pullback.
I did a marketing career satisfaction survey in December and January, and surprisingly, COVID's been a neutral impact on career satisfaction for marketers. It was really surprising to me, but 44% said COVID's had no impact on their career satisfaction. 27.9% said that it's negatively impacted their career satisfaction, and 27.5% said that it's improved their career satisfaction. You can imagine that for the people that it's improved, it's because they don't have a long commute or they've got more time with family, that kind of thing. For the others, most generally, it's either that COVID's had a really negative impact on their industry as a whole, or they're having a very hard time putting a boundary up between home and work.
Yes.
Which certainly I've seen that. I don't know if you've got any comment on that from any of your clients or anything that you're seeing in the marketplace.
I've noticed that things have changed, and I don't have any data. I'd love to find some if I could. But what I seem to notice personally is at the beginning of COVID, as people were switching to remote work, that there was a lot of email coming out, a lot of solicitations for different kinds of content. There were a lot of webinars being done, a lot of live streamed events. And I think we've gotten to a bit of a fatigue factor there, because with so many Zoom calls that people are just doing to keep in touch internally, and then to be asked to sit on webinars for an hour or two, I think people are just fatigued of being on those kind of calls. And so I've noticed a pretty big decline in the number of offers that have come my way in terms of being able to do that. And I think that these are the moments where opportunities are going to surface to allow people to do other things. I believe you and I were talking about this new app Clubhouse, which is taking the world by storm right now, where people can get on and have these audio chat rooms where they can discuss a wide variety of topics and network. I think people really miss networking. And from a marketer's standpoint, trade shows and networking events, there are a lot of work. There's travel involved being away from home. But there's nothing that really substitutes that one-on-one face-to-face interaction. As things like Zoom calls and webinars are starting to taper off a little bit because of fatigue, new things like these Clubhouse audio networking events are taking their place because it allows people just to relax a little bit. They can do it in their car. They can do it while sitting in their underwear in their bedroom. It doesn't matter. There's no video with it. And so it takes a little bit of the stress off having to stare at your computer.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on what direction things are going to go after we get back to the quote unquote new normal. Part of me thinks, okay, are we going to have a resurgence of the roaring 20s, like after World War I and after the pandemic of 1918? Is it going to be that people have so much pent up desire to get out and be among people that it's going to be like a new 1920s? Or are people going to say, hey, I like being able to network without leaving my house? I've been talking with people all over the world by Zoom because now I'm like, oh, the walls are down. I can meet with people anywhere. What are your thoughts?
From a business standpoint, things have certainly changed. I think people aren't going to give up remote work easily. Maybe they'll transition to a half and half, or one day in the office, 2 days in the office, something like that. I think people have discovered a healthier work-life balance in being able to enjoy some time with their family. They realize that all that time commuting is really wasted time. And so I think there are changes there that are going to be very slow to go away, if ever. But I do think with massive stimulus probably coming from the government here in fairly short order, with the vaccine rollout underway, And I do believe that there's a tremendous amount of pent-up desire to get out, more for personal reasons than for business reasons. But even think of all these business road warriors and how they love their gold medallion status on this airline. I don't know what the airlines are going to do, but I have to believe that most of that stuff is expired for a lot of people. It's almost like starting from scratch. That was the key to vacations and fun times, and trade shows and corporate events were a way to get out of town and go to fun places, maybe not only by yourself, but with your family. So I think there's going to be a huge pent-up demand for all of that. And I do think it will come roaring back, especially if there's a lot of government stimulus and other things that are going on. One of the things that was passed, I think it was one of the last things that Trump did, was now business meals are fully tax deductible. It used to only be 50%. So this is bringing back a 3-martini lunch. Take your customers out for a business lunch and write it all off on your taxes. We still have had a hard time doing that because a lot of restaurants are still closed. They don't open indoor dining. But once people feel comfortable doing all of that, I think things are going to come roaring back, especially in some sectors.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, specifically for the 3-martini lunch, is that what?
Early in my career, I was a buyer for printing. And I was in my 20s, but I was responsible for a budget of a couple million dollars. And I dined at pretty much every nice restaurant in Washington, D.C. on a printer's dime. That was nice. Yep. I've definitely been a beneficiary of many of those, maybe more like 3 glasses of wine lunch. I'm not a big martini drinker, but that was nice. That was always a nice little perk. So Eric, it's been fabulous talking with you. And I'd love to give you an opportunity to sort of wrap up. Any last thoughts or words of wisdom that you'd like to share with the Marketing Mambo tribe out there?
Yeah. So Terry, thanks for having me on the show today. I would just end with this, that marketing really is the engine that drives growth within a company. And just like you wouldn't go anywhere in your car on fumes, if you don't fill up your tank and make sure that you've got an engine that is running, that is going to be consistently out there, executing your marketing tactics, building that brand awareness, generating leads for your company, you're going to have a hard time growing. And so treat it as that engine, treat it as something that you want to nurture, you want to take care of, and you want to make sure that you're giving it the investment dollars, especially over time. You will see the results of that perseverance.
I love that analogy. Take care of your marketing vehicle. So, Eric, where can people find you?
Yeah, great. My website is 5echelon.com. That's where all the stuff about my virtual CMO services is located. I'm at LinkedIn, and it's Eric Dickman, D-I-C-K-M-A, 2 N's at the end. If somebody wants to look me up there, or E. Dickman on Twitter. And I hope that they'll also check out the Virtual CMO podcast, which is available anywhere. Get your podcast.
Yeah. And also your Work Life podcast.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I can't forget Work Life. So Work Life, it's a little bit harder to find because YouTube doesn't give you such a nice URL, but I have a personal website too, ericdickman.com, and the Work Life series is listed there.
Okay, great. I will share all of those links in the show notes. So Eric, thank you so much for being a guest today on Marketing Mambo.
Terry, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Marketing Mambo. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe, like, and share. I'd love to hear from you. Check out the show notes for my social media and contact information. Until next time, adios.